There's a whole lot of things I want to tell you about. Adventures, dangerous and queer. Some you could guess, and some I've only hinted at. So please lend me your ear.
Everyone has a relationship with gender. What's your story? Hello and welcome to Gender Stories with your host, Dr. Alex Yantafi.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Gender Stories. I know I'm always excited, but I am delighted to be interviewing a compatriot, I think the word is, Italian. Nikos Balboa is an Italian visual artist who uses his life events as inspiration for works ranging from painting, drawing, tattoo to pyrography, graphic journal, and sketchbook. He reveals his hopes, failures, and successes in candid and at times excoriating work that is frequently both tragic and humorous. The themes of provocation and sexuality repeatedly surface in Nikos' work, as his oeuvre is firmly rooted in the tradition of a trans feminist discourse. Benvenuto, Nico, finalmente. We finally meet after interacting online. It's so good to see you.
For me, it's like if my daughter today were meeting Taylor Swift. For me today, meeting you, it's the same. So, sono molto felice.
Oh, wow. I mean, that is high compliment. As somebody who also has a daughter who is a Swiftie, I feel like that's a very, very high compliment. Thank you.
You know what I mean.
Yes. Well, I feel the same. I love your beautiful work. I think, you know, your beautiful art, your books, which really have a lot of your own journey, right? Your graphic novels. I don't know. Would you call them a graphic novel, graphic memoir?
I call it maybe graphic novels in the more broad way. And sometimes, at least in Italian, I say autofiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe graphic memoir in English, I guess it fits. And mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, you have some beautiful, two beautiful graphic memoirs are out, right? The second one is out too. And so I'm really excited. Tell me more about why a graphic memoir. You're very open about your own journey. What inspired you to pull it all together into a graphic memoir?
I guess some egoistic will of seeing a story who's being told, to read the book that I maybe would have liked to read before I started my transition, before even I started my questioning. Mm-hmm. And so I always did some autobiographical, I don't know if it's the right word.
That's the right word, yeah.
Okay, autobiographical work, since forever. But maybe the thing is that has changed for Play With Fire and then for Transformer. Mm-hmm. It was that I wanted to tell my story, to repair something for myself. And in the meantime, I also wanted to talk about those things that I felt, that I learned, that I discovered, that I been in touch or observator of. While I was questioning my sexuality and my gender and my identity. And I guess that a little bit more in each book, and hopefully also in this one I'm doing right now, I wanted to mix a story, but also I was thinking about if somebody that has this book and read this story but never had a meeting, a connection with a queer person, I would like this person also to be taken on the journey of mm-hmm. understanding the story and understanding what I was talking about.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I'm so grateful for your stories, because I think for me, I've read a lot of memoirs of trans people, mostly in English. And for me, with your stories, there was a, it was like a visceral connection, because it wasn't just about gender, but culturally, it felt so much closer to my experience, my heart. We're also, I mean, you're a little bit younger than me, but we're the same generations, brought up in Italy. And so for me, there was something that, like, you know, I get goosebumps even thinking about it, where I was like, oh, this feels so much closer to my soul. That's the best way I can describe it, because there is that cultural element that I think also, you know, we experience gender through language, through culture. And so for me, it was so important to see a story that felt so much closer to my own experience, my own way of thinking, my own emotions. Does that make sense? I don't know if you got that feedback from other people too, but...
I guess it makes totally sense, because I live in France, and I've been living here for 23 years. I realized that there is, even though even in the same community, cultural origins make also the way you approach certain things differently. And so what I see, for example, in my, for my book, Play With Fire, which is the first one of this series, that has been translated in France. And I realized that, there is a different way of talking about things. I guess that in Italy, I don't know why, but sometimes we are a little bit more elastic, a little bit more like, especially maybe we are from Rome. And so we are like, oh, whatever, this is whatever. And so sometimes it can be a curse or a gift, because when I was telling this story, I realized that for some things, maybe the fact of being Roman and having this whatever, that can be translated, maybe, can I say a curse word?
You can, yes.
Yeah, I can. This is the famous sticazzi. This is
sticazzi.
It's like the Roman way. It's like, oh, I feel this, but whatever. Or I want to change this, but oh, but there is sun. I don't care to change. And sometimes it can be cool, but also like it's more difficult to analyze things, because it's more with the guts. And so I wanted to keep this, sorry, my English, to keep this lightness, this being light, being elastic of the Roman way of thinking and or telling the story. But in the meantime, I wanted to pass some infos, but not taking myself too serious. And so to wrap my sentence, I realized this when I have feedback, especially from French people, because in Italy, people loved the book, like the community of trans and queer people.
Yeah, I love the book.
They were very supportive, and I felt a lot strong community, and especially for Play With Fire, I was able to travel a little to promote it in very cool space, even though it was 2020. And for Transformer, I couldn't manage to go a lot around. But in France, I realized that people were surprised. The feedback were people loved the book, but also like the fact that I could approach those team also in a not serious way. That doesn't mean that it's not serious, but in a way it can be light and joyful, even when you tell about dramas, or not dramas, but heavy stuff.
Exactly. I think there's a quality culturally about where we can hold the heavy stuff with some sense of humor still, almost like not tragicomic, but sometimes some moments are like, right, we can see the light side of even really heavy moments. I think that makes a lot of sense. I also love in your work the vulnerability. I think for a lot of trans masculine people, often there is like such a, well, how do I want to say this? But there's such a desire, right, to be seen as masculine and seen as a man, you know. And what I love about your work is that there is a vulnerability, a masculinity that for me, again, culturally feels much closer, you know, a masculinity where we can cry, we can have emotions, we can be loud. It doesn't make us less of a man, in air quotes, whatever being a man means, because that's not how I identify, but I'm definitely on that end, right? But yes. There was a different, am I making sense? I don't know if you feel that way or not, but.
Mm-hmm. Yes, totally. And yes, totally. And also, I've come a long way because I had to come to term because in the beginning of my transition, for example, I wasn't so elastic, so
flexible.
Aware.
Yeah.
What?
Flexible? Dimmelo in italiano.
Yeah. Sì, esatto. Flexible. I wasn't so flexible because when I started my transition, I started coming out the day I got the paper from the therapist that says, okay, you can go to an endocrinologist and have the testosterone. Mm-hmm. Until that moment, I didn't came out because I was afraid. I tried, but wasn't. And so when I came out, even though some close friends say to me, oh, what a surprise, no, like they were expecting this, but when I came out, I was like, okay, now I have to perform the male. And so I cut the hair and I was like, okay, couldn't wear colors or and also because the moment I came out, even though I came out very late in my life, in the moment I came out, I couldn't stand anymore people who tell me ma'am instead of miss, and because it was too much building up. And then I was like, okay, now it has to be this or nothing. And this was 4 years ago. And since that moment, I learned to own my masculinity in the way you were saying, like, I, even though now I know that if I dress colored or in my way of talking, when I'm the telephone, I got a lot of ma'am. And when I dress colored and people see me from behind, people say, excuse me, ma'am. And then I turn, oh, mister. But now I don't care. Maybe because now I own my masculinity, and also because maybe I feel comfortable thanks to the testosterone that got me to this point in which I feel good. And so even if somebody say, ma'am, now I don't care anymore because I'm not fragile in my masculinity. I'm more like Ken now.
Yes.
So...
But you have a lot of jobs. Your work is not just beach, spiaggia.
I wish, but...
I mean, that's real. As an Italian, I was like, yes, I would like the work beach, please. Like, it's like, I would like to be on the beach in the sunshine rather than in an office most of the time. Oh, I love that. But I think that's true for a lot of people. As we get more comfortable in our own gender, then we're less influenced by the outside world and the expectation of, like, you should perform masculinity in this way, which also changes, you know. Like, I feel like as I get older, my masculinity also changes, which makes sense, you know, like that's happening. And I'm just curious about whether you notice how your gender expression changes when you're in France versus when you're in Italy, as you're getting a little bit older, you know, you're in your 40s still, but, you know, do you feel that changes the way you express your gender as well? Or
I guess that now I allow myself to be more feminine, mm-hmm. like doing the quote. Because I, all first thing first, my very first approach to how to understand my gender come from you. So I know that I can quote, and this is the place that we know what we are talking about. But sometimes I can allow myself to be more, more mellow and not performing. And in society, when I'm in Italy or when I'm... but I also like to play with this way of expressing masculinity, especially with a little bit more tough. But it's also a game. So I don't know if I change my expression or my way of approaching the expression between Italy or France. I don't think that I change it by the place. But mm-hmm. what I realize is that I have changed the way I interact with people, especially... I know that, for example, when I'm in an office or, I don't know, somebody control my papers, when I was a reader, female?
Oh, yeah, feminine.
Feminine. I could be, oh, you want to give me a ticket? Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't understand. And I used this so much. I guess maybe it's the fault of patriarchy, because when we are read as female, we are less threatening and more accepted and more eager to be helped when we present fragile. But in some way, I use this. And when I transitioned and my expression changed, sometimes I did this. And I realized that the effect on the other people was the opposite. Because when I was read as female and I was like, no, I'm sorry, all the doors open. But when you are read as male, I often have these sideburns and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. And so people are like, oh, this is a male, feminine, homosexual, or I don't know. And... they are very more, how do you say in English?
Even more macho or masculine.
Even more macho than the door closes.
Yeah.
And at least for me, I don't know, I'm not speaking from anyone, but in my case, I realized that I couldn't use the same way of interact. Even the being polite, I couldn't. I have to switch. This is the things I have to switch. And to finish, I can also add that in some way, I had to open an account in the postal service anyway, some paperwork in France. And I did it, and then I did something wrong, and I needed to change this anyway. And so I was at the telephone with a tech guy, and since I needed my paper to do this, so I was, madam, because my paper. And I realized now I'm some kind of get used to the being read as male privilege, or I don't know if it's a privilege, but in a way is the way of people talk to me when they are men. And I'm doing some technical things. When the men read me as a man, they are like, okay, I can help you. Yes, it's like this, you got this. And when they read as female, it's like, it's not like this. You have to go there and do this. And I'm the same person.
But yes.
The person see, female. So they don't know what they are doing. No. And this is a little bit shocking, not shocking, but it's fastidioso. How do you say?
Sì, it's really annoying when you can see fastidioso, annoying. That's a good way to put it. That is so true. Like how I'm read really changes so much. And also if I'm read, you know, am I being read as a lesbian? Am I being read as a man? Am I being read as a gay man? You know, when I remember once doing a trip when my daughter was small with one of my partners is like 6'7" and I went to check in at the hotel and they were like, oh yes. And you're traveling with your family. Where's your wife? And I was like, it's the tall 6'7" British man over there. That's my wife. And the person was like,
what?
You know, what is happening right now? And I'm like, exactly. I feel like that is my life. What is happening right now? Like I confuse a lot of people because my gender is just tends to be really fluid. And my sexuality also, it's really confusing to people. You know, they often expect me to have a femme partner, which I don't, as somebody who's mostly attracted to masculine folks. And so, yeah, it gets really confusing, I think, for people. Yeah.
It's so fun because, for example, my daughter she's going to be 15 next week. Mm-hmm. And I've been traveling with her since she's 2 months old. We've been everywhere, and also we traveled to the States when she was like 5 years old. So I never had any problem. Me passing the check-in counter with a kid when I was read as female, I was like, okay. And this, it was maybe last summer or last winter. Anyway, I was traveling with her, and when we arrived at the gate, I gave the paper, and then before I gave the paper, or maybe my daughter gave the paper. Anyway, I know that the land hostess, the one who checked the paper and make you go on the plane, read me as male with a teen young girl.
Yep.
And she went to my daughter and she said, okay, and where is your mom here, or where is your mom, or something like this. And it was the very first time that this happened, that she was checking if all was, and I was like, I am the mom, because I said in French, there is, you genderize the noms. So I was like, oui, je suis le maire, il mammo, it's me, si. Il mammo. And it was Mr. Mom, it's me, because she called me mom. So
yes.
And it was fun. And she was like, okay, no problem.
It's very true, because I think they're watching out for trafficking and all of that, which while I can understand what they're doing, I've had similar experiences where when I'm with, especially when my daughter was younger, like I remember being at Disneyland, for example, and she was younger and she wanted me to go into the bathroom with her. And I was like, sure, I can come to the accessible bathroom with you, because it was very overwhelming and there were lots of people. And one of the people checking there was like, you can't go in. And I was like, she came out of my body and she wants me to go in with her. I'm going in right now. Like, you're not going to stop. And my kiddo was so confused. It's like, what is happening? You know, because she was like 6 or 7, I think, at the time. And I was like, I'll explain later. And then later I explained. I was like, I was being read of a different gender and they were worried I was a threat to you. And there's definitely been a few other moments when we travel where it's like, it is very different when you travel, like appearing more masculine with a femme kiddo, with a daughter. It's a very different experience. There's so many things I want to talk to you about. One of the things that I love that you do is you keep your own graphic journal, and you also teach people how to keep a graphic journal, right? And I'm bringing this up because I feel like a lot of your experiences, both in the world, but also inner experiences, like emotional experiences, you find this beautiful way of putting visually in your graphic journal. So do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about this practice that you have of the graphic journal?
of course, so the beginning of this graphic journal, I always had a journal and also always had this practice of making comics out of my life. Mm-hmm. But in 2011, I bought this Moleskine agenda mm-hmm. planner, and I had bought this one day planner. At the beginning, my idea of a project was doing, I don't know, one self-portrait a day, one page, one self-portrait for 1 year. And my idea was putting it on a blog, and I wanted to call it self-portrait a day, a way to learn to love myself and find a new husband. This was my idea. Anyway.
And what happened instead?
What happened instead is that since day one, I couldn't contain myself. I've been recently diagnosed with ADHD, which is not a surprise, but I'm seeing somebody once a month to keep up with this. I'm not medicating, but just to talk about this. So I probably when I couldn't manage to only put one drawing a day. Mm-hmm. I wanted to, and so I started doing this every day. I draw and write all I did in this day. It was not inner narration, not self emotion narration of the emotion, just the day. Mm-hmm. And I kept this every day for maybe 3 years, and I put this on a blog. You can see it. It's like this blog is called nicodsgoeswest.wordpress.com, and the majority of those things are there. And then also this became a book called Born to Lose, only mm-hmm. out in Italy. Mm-hmm. And I started doing this, and I started giving from 2015. I did a workshop for just self-narration, and I would explain and show to people who come how other artists keep up with self-narration, travel journal, recipe journal, and everything. And during the pandemic, so 4 years ago, what happened? Everybody was in lockdown, and we were very scared and very like this. And I had this practice of keeping a graphic journal, but in a way of more like drawing fears, drawing mm-hmm. dreams, drawing dreams not in the nighttime, you know, goals. All sorts of things. And I realized that it felt very good that I didn't have to keep up with, I ate this, I bought this, I slept at 9 p.m., just like I felt this and all these kind of things. And so I started giving classes for people in lockdown, like me, on Zoom. And so we gather on the Zoom, and we started at the beginning. It was a lot around, drawing, how we draw, how we can narrate. And we used a lot a book by the genius Linda Berry, which mm-hmm. is a cartoonist and a MacArthur's Genius Grant winner, I guess. She has this way of keeping up with a journal, and she draw a cross on a page, and she put a timer, and she said, okay, you have 5 minutes total, and you in one section of this 4 section that you create on your page by creating this, writing down this cross, and in which you write down what you did, what you saw, what you say, and something like this. And So the first maybe two or three times we met, we used to meet once a week, I guess, for like the first month because it was the pandemic. And then I realized that for me, what was more important wasn't what I did, what I eat, what I say, but what I feel, what I want to feel, what I'm afraid to do, to feel. And twice a month, then I started doing this. And then after 1 year, I closed it down to once a month. Mm-hmm. And so, what's happened during the class, we have every month to 1 hour and a half, sometimes 2 hour class around the theme. And during this class, we investigate what we feel, we draw, we write. Sometimes people cry, and it's very good because I'm a Cancerian, and when somebody cries, it's very good emotions. And yes, I hope that I answered.
You did, and I love detail, don't worry. And okay. I also am late diagnosed with ADHD, so we can go down all the side quests we want. It's all good. This is our interview. We can do whatever we want.
Parentesi su parentesi. How do you
si, parentesi, veramente. Parentheses over, like, I don't even know in English. In English, I like how people with ADHD say side quests.
Side quests.
Yeah, parentheses, parentheses, parentheses. we can do all the side quests we want. And I think what I love about the graphic journal, if I wonder, like, was that a big part of your own gender exploration as well, of course? It looks like it, but does it feel like that's what also enabled you to explore your own gender through that means?
Yes, and it's fun because when I during the pandemic, I started consulting with a therapist, not a gender specialist, because I'm living in a very small town and there's still no gender specialist, but with a therapist since December 2018. And I started transitioning summer 2020. So during this time, it was a lot of inner work, and it was also the moment I was drawing my book Play with Fire.
Yes.
And so it was fun because I started this book because I just wanted to talk about my coming out and my sexuality.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about this was the book, just talking about this. But in the meantime, and it's fun because you can see it in this in Play with Fire. The first part is very like it's a story, and then it becomes an inner dialogue with drawings and consideration. So the last part of the book was writing down my inner researching about this, and then in 2020, it was fun because I was doing this future me meditation, or does it make sense? And it was like a meditation. I don't remember with who. It was something I was listening, but I don't remember the source. But I was like, it's future you that come to you and you see yourself in 5 years or something like this.
Yeah.
And then I wrote down and drew my future self. And it was fun because I found this a few days ago and it was like me now.
That's amazing.
A little bit more air since I'm balding, but anyway, we don't care. But It was fun because I use it as drawing, as a way of experimenting in the narration, but also in the graphic journaling practice.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So the two coexist, the one that goes outside and also the one that is just for me. And then when I started the the meditation. No way. It's a sort of meditation, but I wanted to say I started the transition.
Which is a sort of meditation in some ways. Yes.
I started keeping this graphic journal.
Journals. It's okay. You speak so many languages, Nico. I don't think you need to apologize. This is like, you know, your first language is Italian. You function in French every day. And now I'm making you do this interview in English. So I think you're good. No need to apologize.
I started keeping this graphic journal and I posted this on my Moleskine Instagram account, which is a mom and Moleskine journal. It's contraction of the two, and I called it I archived it with the hashtag sleeping in a binder, because I did this drawing of me sleeping with my binder completely in compressed, and so I started drawing all that happened. I guess that a lot of people do this, like feeling the need of reporting, or no, how do you say in English? Fare un reportage, documenting.
Document.
Their transition, but maybe it's a generational thing I couldn't manage to doing, for example, on YouTube. Or as a lot of young people may do, or with picture. And so I did this by drawing, and this body of work of graphic journal, so it was like very instinctive. There were like, I feel it, I live it, I write it. There were no rewriting, just I'm feeling it, I'm living it, I put it on paper and I posted on this account, which is a little bit more private than my Nico Balboa main account. And but then I use this body of work, this all this content, to rewrite my book Transformer. And in this case, I use this as to relieve the emotion, to realize the milestone or the things I did. But then I turned it into my book, my graphic novel. And so I needed to rewrite and change a little bit the timeline. But yes, the exploration of identity and graphic journal were like this.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And I also love how much, you know, I love a lot of your images, and in a lot of your images as well, there is like, I feel, and maybe I'm wrong, but you tell me, but I feel like that, you know, your inner world, dream world is very important, but also there is an element of water sometimes with like the gender fluid mirror people, you know, and all that. So tell me about water and your relationship with water. As a watery being, I want to know. I've been wanting to ask you this question because if, you know, and it almost feels connected because I feel like dreams, in a way, bring us to this very fluid, watery place where there's possibility. So I don't know. I'm just curious about whether you, yes, what that means to you.
Yes. And, you are so right, this connection with water. And it's funny because I didn't realize it. For example, yes, like in the play with fire, there is all this part of the narration in which the character is female and questioning their sexuality. And then there is this matter of, I have to just jump in the water, but maybe not. And then there is this scene in which the character jumps and feel like suffocating. And then there is this fish that comes and say, just learn to swim and non ci rompere le palle. Don't bore us with your Cancerian stuff. And then the book also finished with, and then there is a lot of consideration around mermaids, like the character says, okay, what is gender? And at that time, I didn't know that mermaid is a symbol of transness. I didn't. And so, and the character say, okay, so are those the genitals that do the gender? So if I see a mermaid that has no genitals, but I can really tell she's a female mermaid or mermaid. So merman. So what's all this? And then the end of the book, the character jump in the sea and transform in a mermaid. We don't know. It's like questioning about gender, but we don't know the end of the book. And so the book after start with a guy with a mustache, which is a wishful thinking because I can't help to grow a mustache. But anyway, but my character in the book has a mustache because it's my book. I do what I want.
Exactly.
And so the character is on the couch and he fell asleep watching Hamilton, and there is this song, "Who Tells Your Story?" And then there is this mermaid that comes and say, "Who will tell your story?" And the book, mm-hmm. the book starts. And it's fun because, so I made this little resume of the water in the narration, but it's fun because, so I had a lot of work around mermaid, I had this series called Merm Trance. Mm-hmm. The fun thing is that I used a lot the mermaid, the water and all the things. And in September, I started painting a new series, and I didn't realize, but I started this painting. I'm calling this new perimeter, I guess, and because it's about my body now as a new perimeter, has changed. I got the top surgery 1 year ago, so there is a whole new experimentation of how my body feels, and sometimes I'm like, sometimes I'm like, in the bathroom, and maybe my partner enter, and I take the l'asciugamano,
sì, the towel,
the towel, and I goes like, and I hide my boobs, and then I'm like, oh no, I don't have, oh so cool, and so I started this painting of a new perimeter, and it's a series of self-portrait underwater. And yeah. I didn't realize that it's connected, but it is in some way, because it's like, I guess I love so much swimming. I love being, it's not like swimming, but I love, like, I feel like una foca.
How do you know? Seal, I think. Seal.
The seal, for me, it's the best animal because I feel like it. Because it's an animal that doesn't run at all on the land. It's not very fast on the land, like me. I'm not very, but once underwater, it's very gracious. And but it's not a fish; it's a mammal, anyway. And so I hope that I answered. But I guess that and also like it's very beautiful to see image. Of yeah. underwater scene, I feel it very satisfying.
Mm-hmm. So. No, I love the water, so I love all those images of mer people. I really think you tap into some collective imaginary, even when you didn't know yet. And, you know, my mom is from Sicily, so from an island, so I was brought up around a lot of water. So I'm like, yes, I love all that water imagery. And yes, yes, it's just so beautiful. And you bring that, like you also tattoo some of your mer people, which is really exciting. And we haven't really talked about your tattooing work. But I am really curious because, you know, we're both Gen Xers, you know, we're both Gen X. Yes. And I don't know about you, but growing up in Italy, like when people thought I was a girl, tattoos were not really a thing. Was pretty edgy when I first got my first tattoo. You know, my mom was like, oh my God, what have you done? You know, and now I'm like, I was covered in them, you know, when we go to the seaside. But it's like, how did you come to your journey as a tattoo artist, you know? And it's like I said, maybe your experience was different, but definitely there was like a little bit of like frowning upon tattoos for girls, again, in air quotes, when I was growing up in like the 70s, 80s, you know. I mean, I know you're a little younger than me, like, but.
Yes, no, but it's like it's very same. For example, the first I got in the 90s when I was at the liceo, at the high school.
High school?
Mm-hmm. Small tattoos. And then when I finished high school, I got this forearm tattoo, and my mother didn't knew about this, so I was always like with long sleeves
covered up.
June, my mother was, "You are not hot." "No, I'm okay." "Very good." And then I got sick in July. So I got the tattoo during the winter. In July, I got sick with, how do you call it? Mononucleosis.
Mono. Just mono.
Mm-hmm. But it was a period of my young time. I was a very, very scavezzacollo. I don't know how to say. I
used to go to risk taker, yes.
Risk taker, going to the rave party, taking drugs. Sorry for people. I don't do this anymore. I know it can be maybe not very fun to hear this, but it was long time ago, so all is good. But at that time, I wasn't very good in myself, in my life. So I did this, I saw this demono hit me very hard. I got to the hospital, and I was like this, and they got my sleeve up to just take a blood test, and my mother was there and was like, "What?" And at that time it was like 1998, and a big forearm tattoo was a big deal.
Oh,
and
absolutely, it would be a big deal in Italy in 98.
Like, and I did it for this, and I was like, "I'm getting tattoo here, so I will never go work in an office or in the bank or I don't know." I did this kind of statement, and now, for example, in France, in my bank, there is and tattoos and all sorts of. So, and anyway, and so it was a very big deal. And then I worked in this tattoo shop in San Giovanni neighbor in Rome. And it was a very, very misogynistic.
Absolutely. It's a very male dominated industry in Italy. Yes. Like in the, that time. Mm-hmm.
And then I went living in Paris, like the year, 1 or 2 years later. And I remember I was working at a tattoo shop, and I was doing just the piercing, but also like needles, but at the time you need to saldare. How do you say?
The word is totally escaping me. Soldering, I think it's called soldering or something.
Soldering, yes. Needles, all these kind of things.
I think,
taking the appointment, and I were working there, but while doing an illustration school. And so I was drawing and doing piercing in the shop, and I got tattooed, and I wanted to start tattooing, but at that time tattoos was misogynistic, not open at all to different styles. It was this kind of style. There is no illustration, no strange things, no this way. And I remember once telling, "I want to start tattoo. I would like to start." And at the time, people perceived me as female, as a young girl. And this tattooer who was there, he was horrible. This guy was horrible. Like, the guy would go to do sport combat. And every time he came back to the shop, he wanted to demonstrate on me. Yesterday we learned this and this. And I was like, "Oh, please don't hurt me." And it was like, and then he said, "Female can't tattoo because female has a very small hand that doesn't have the strength to do tattoo." It's not true. And since,
no, that is so not true. It's like, that's ridiculous. Yeah.
It was very strange. But then it were about a moment, like it was 2001, and there were a few tattooers in France that started doing things that wasn't tattoo at all, but was very mm-hmm. illustration style.
Yeah.
It wasn't the case for Italy. Italy,
no.
Or this was very, very good at traditional tattoos.
Yes.
But it wasn't still very open to illustration in tattoo. And it took me like more than 10 years before starting doing tattoo. The moment I said, okay, you know what? I don't give a fuck. Sorry for the curse word. I was like, I don't care. I want to do this. And in the meantime, the society of tattooing, the world of tattooing had changed a little. But I realized that I still, like 20 and more, 25 years later, I still have this imposter syndrome. Mm. Like when I tattoo, I always said, I don't have imposter syndrome. No, it's something I don't have. And once I realized that, maybe a few months ago, once I was tattooing and I realized that every time I tattoo, I always think, now somebody will arrive and see me tattoo and say, and realize that I am not able to tattoo. We'll see that I can't do it. And when I see myself from above doing this, and I was like, actually, this is the big imposter syndrome. And now I don't have it anymore, and also I don't care. But I realize that I have this pressure of, okay, my lines, I have to be perfect, my colors and my shading, and I have to prove that I'm like... It's something that is difficult to debunk. And
of course.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That makes sense. I have that with writing. Every time I write or a new book comes out and people are like, are you excited? And I'm like, I feel like I'm going to vomit. Like, I'm so nervous because now everybody's going to see that I can't write or that I'm not very smart, or that somehow, you know, it feels like it's exposing, because then your work is out there. And in a way with tattoos, your work is out there too. Once it's on the skin, it's on the skin, right?
Yes.
You've put it out there and it's permanent. And so I'm so happy to hear you say, like, I saw it and I let it go. But it takes a lot of work to do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Being very... vigilant, even though vigilant evoke me a energy of like being like this, but more like a witness of what I'm talking and just realize, oh, okay, it's the scary one again that talk in my mind, the one who is afraid of this random tattooer from 20 years ago. The guy, now I realize that he was like horrible, and he always smells like so I don't care about him, you know. He was like the guy go to the gym and then come and don't wash himself, and then try their combat gym on me, and misogynistic, and why I'm afraid of what this person that I never seen anymore thinks.
Yeah, because we internalize all those messages. When that's where that Italian, but especially from Rome, Rome attitude of sti cazzi can help. Because it can be like, hang on a minute, right? Why is this person having power over me, right? But I love so much of your stories, really about pushing boundaries, following your gut, following your heart, following what you want, right? And what you know to be true for yourself. I know we're almost at time, but one thing I haven't asked you, which I really want to ask because I think it feels so close to, you know, my own experience in some ways, is like, how did it go coming out as trans with your Italian family? Because that was definitely a thing. Like, I mean, I guess coming out as trans was on top of a lot of coming outs for me at that point, you know, it's just one more thing. But I wonder what it was like for you.
The same. One more thing that I, the black sheep of the family.
Okay, you're also the black sheep of the family.
Black sheep of the family.
The two artists who doesn't live close to their family, but is in another country. Yes.
All the same, and it's fun because more than one time, even when I was like coming out in my sexuality, I had people, not from my family, but sometimes people from Italy that used the fact that I had a daughter as a leverage. Like, yes, you have a daughter. Yeah. And I was like, especially because I have a daughter, I want to be very good, very well, and teach her that you can be yourself. And then my family, it was very fun. I don't know, it was a strange time because, like, before I came out, I guess it was like the summer of 2020, I started my social transition, coming out to a few people, but couldn't manage to came out really official because what happened? So I had my paper from the therapist. They say, okay, you have the validation of the dysphoria.
You've done enough therapy.
You can do it. Okay. And I had this. And so I felt safe to come out to people around me. But then I went to the endocrinologist and then my first endocrinology was a mess. Anyway, from summer, I get the appointment in November. And so for me, until I wasn't like starting the testosterone, couldn't manage to say it because now I realize it was not. But at the time I was like, okay, like I didn't want to jinx it in some way. It's crazy to say this, but...
It makes sense. Mm-hmm.
And also, don't do this at home, but I started testosterone before because a friend gave it to me and it was like, I was like doing very microdosing just to feel like I was doing it. And so then this official, I needed to have this final validation. I went in Rome for summer and my family understand something that was something where was going on. And it was very fun because my father, which is something is very present and very loving, at that time was like, couldn't cope with this. So it was like a little bit like took the distance.
Yeah.
And even though one day he took me and with the scooter and we went like all Nanni Moretti style doing scooter, and then we take a coffee in near Castel Sant'Angelo, which is my favorite place.
But I love that area.
I love, and he couldn't process it because and I couldn't express it because I was protecting my identity and I couldn't manage to say it's like this, no big deal. And I was like very defensive, so the communication wasn't very good. I just remember that I felt this very big euphoria in letting all my hair grow. Mm-hmm. And when you come from Italy and you are read as a female, hair is a very big deal.
It is.
It is. And my father was like, what are you doing? You're letting yourself go. You have hair on. And I couldn't manage to say, no. But in the same time, my mother, we were at the seaside. We were with my daughter at Nettuno, the seaside. Yeah. And my mother started telling the story of when she was pregnant with me and everybody in 1978 and 79, people, we had the ultrasound, but not very good ultrasound. Yeah. And everybody say, the belly is a boy.
It's a boy, yeah. The shape of the belly, yes, that's a thing in Italy.
It's a boy, and so they had this the name ready for the boy, And then they think, but if it's a girl, what would we do? And they were watching television, and there was this annunciatrice. I don't know if something that in the US existed at the time. One person that goes in the television and say, tonight the movie is this. And
makes the announcement, literally.
Announcement to the, and Nicoletta Somando was
there. Sì.
And so they were like, but also Nicoletta is a good name. And so my mother told the story of when she deliver. I don't know the
name. Yeah, deliver, yeah.
And they say, my father was in the room and said, Nicoletta. And my mother was like, it's impossible. Is Gian Maria was the name. It's impossible. We say it's a boy. And they said, no, it's a girl. And she told this story to my daughter. And she said, like this. And then she said, so she told, it's impossible. It's a boy. No, it's a girl. No, it's a boy. And then she, and the story is telling, turns out I was right.
And I your mom could see you and like open the door for your coming out. That's so beautiful. Oh, Nico.
At the beginning was like this. But then what happened, the moment I came, when I came out, the situation changed. Yeah. My mother said, okay, I realize it's like this because even, you know, your grandma bought you this pair of Levi's jeans when you and they say, people say that it was for the boy, and your grandma said, I don't care. So she was very aware of my identity. And in the meantime, when I came out, she was like, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do operation. Don't do it. It's very difficult. It's don't do this. And then she couldn't. I guess she was afraid.
I wonder if she was scared. Yeah.
She was scared. And then my father, the thing is that for a long time, this didn't exist. I didn't say anything. I had to came out more and more. And one day I say to him, I love you so much. But when you do this, for me, it's impossible. So right now, I have to cut the bridge of communication with you, not out of I don't love you, but because of protecting myself.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. And then for a long time, we didn't engage in conversation. And then we start again. And one time I called him, and he's retired. Mm-hmm. He's retired, but he plays tennis every day. He's a big tennis fan. And so I called him, and he was at his tennis club. And he answered, and he said, oh, my son. And I was like, what? And so, like, it maybe because I was far away, living abroad since 20 years and over 40, and so I didn't have the pressure of maybe somebody who's young and who came out at home, and there are all sorts of different things. I was able to set more boundaries. But so my father came on the wagon. I don't know how to say.
Comes on board.
But my mother, who was the one who was supporting since the beginning, but then couldn't manage to gender correctly and everything. And then it was last year, we had Christmas, and we had some part of the family that I didn't know. It was like the family of the husband of my sister. Mm-hmm. And so there I sit in front of my mother and I say, okay, now I don't care if you call me Nicoletta. It's okay. Since I transitioned very late in life, and I don't feel like as a dead name. I honor my old name, and I love it in some way because this old person brought me here.
Yeah.
But so I say to her, but when you do this in front of people, you put me in the spot of telling my my story to people I don't know that maybe can be also put me on unsafe situation.
Exactly.
So now you have to do something. And she was like, what? What do I do? And I was like, me, you know? And so it was a little bit of parenting my parents, but also...
Yes.
Anyway, I was safe in my life, so I wasn't in danger, you know? But all the rest of my family, so to finish what you ask about coming out in Italy, the rest of my family, they were so cool. I have this group chat with my father's side, and I came out with a drawing, with something wrote. Everybody was like, okay. And my cousin was like, so cool, because I had all female cousins. I was tired of being the only one. And so for me, my Italian family, they were mostly very cool from the beginning.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I think also, I know it's still really hard for people to come out, but what's interesting is also to hear like the acceptance, but ignoring, like my family did the same thing. We know, but we're not going to talk about it. We're not going to acknowledge it for a long time. You know, I remember having a similar conversation with my mom when she took me and my daughter on holiday in Calabria, because I usually always took her with me when I was traveling. And she was like, I want to take you on holiday. And then I was like, Mom, you're going to put me in danger if you like keep like gendering me incorrectly. And she's like, but nobody thinks I'm a man. I was like, first of all, you don't know what people think. Yes. Second of all, I was like, this is not just about you. It's about how I move in the world. But again, that it was so hard for her to hear, right? But then like, my schoolmates from high school, they have a group chat, you know, we reconnected and they were like, what's new? And I'm like, well, my gender since high school. And everybody was really cool about it. I think there's just a different awareness that's happening. You know, I never seen a trans man that I knew of growing up in the 70s or 80s in Italy. So now I think it's very different.
Yes.
I mean, it's still difficult, but different than it was 20 or 30 or 40 years ago.
Yes, I guess it's the more you have an example and the more there is this ripple effect. And so, but the funny thing is, like, as you say, for my mother, for example, it was like, you are at the restaurant and the waiter comes.
Yes.
And my mother is like, okay, for me, a beer, and for my daughter, a Coke or something like this. And the person this summer, they look at me and they were, and I was like, you know, when you say for my daughter and people see me and maybe I am not shaved and it's on you. Maybe people think that you talk like
yeah, this. People think you have dementia. Like, I said that to my mom. I was like, you know, the more I transition, the more you're going to look really awkward when you say this, because people are going to be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, but if I can share one last thing about this.
Of course.
I went, it was like 1 year into my transition, and I went to Torino. Mm-hmm. I got invited because my book Play with Fire won an award given by the Torino Pride.
That's
and
right.
It was so cool. And I arrived and I had this person that organized this, that was a trans man. And he came with his two partners that are cisgender men. And so especially when you are at the beginning of the transition, the more you connect with trans people and the more you feel at home, you feel you can relax. And so, and then another trans man arrived and we went to the restaurant together. And for me, I look at them and with this big beard and I was like, oh, trans man. And one of them were talking about this. We're talking about that his mother said, my daughter. And so I realized that this never ends. Also, once I watch a documentary on Marsha P. Johnson on Stonewall, yes. And there is the family who was interviewed, that you may be Marsha P. Johnson, your family will misgender you, will. So now what I realize, also because I do this group support for mm-hmm. trans people in La Rochelle once a month, and once one every 3 months we welcome the parents, the family.
Yes.
Without the children, without the yeah. They are not only children.
Every, yeah, but without their
the trans people.
The trans people.
Mm-hmm. Only the family, especially because so they have a safe space to say, I don't give a fuck about gender. You know, they mm-hmm. can verbalize it. And we are there to say, we understand, or we can engage. And so I realize with the this person in Torino who talked mm-hmm. about his mother, or my experience now, what you say, or those family that we welcome and we listen, I realize that it's not transphobia, it's just parenting, because it's like it's very difficult to upgrade the sight, lo sguardo, how do you say?
The gaze
that you have on your own children, that it's already difficult to understand that your children is not two anymore, and he has their own life, their own, you know, adult. And then also understanding that for people that are not very gender aware, that this is a thing and this is something that stays, I guess that for me, it makes the pressure go off. And also, okay, it's a parenting, it's not transphobic, it's not against me. Parents, they do what they can do with what they have in the moment.
And it's there, for me, I think about, okay, with my mom, because my dad, I came out as queer, but I didn't come out as trans. He died just a couple of years before I came out as trans. 20 years ago. And then I came out about as trans, started to come out about 18 years ago. And for me, when I think about that, I think with my mom, it's her journey. It's not mine, right? Mm-hmm. I can share information. She knows a lot of trans people now. She's read some books, right? But that has to be her journey when she's ready. And there is nothing I can do to like change somebody else, right? For me, it's like, what can I control? I can control me, my emotions, make myself happy. It doesn't matter how much of a man I look or a woman, whatever, in terms of what I'm trying to do. Other people are gonna see me through their filters, and their filters are not my filters. I don't know if that makes sense, but for me, yes. I've just been really focusing on like, what feels authentic to me? Because, you know, and of course, considering safety and everything else, but, you know, depending on the environment. But yes, I can't make my mom say the right name or pronouns. I can only explain what it means to me. And then it's up to her if she, you know, it's an invitation. That's all I can do. I can't control it. I can set boundaries, but there's not much else I can do. Exactly.
Of course.
Yeah. Oh, I feel like I could have this conversation all day, but I want to be respectful of your time. I always ask, is there anything we haven't talked about that you were hoping that we would talk about, Nico?
I guess we talk about pretty a lot of things. I don't think I have something that come to my mind. It was a very, very cool to talk to you. A pleasure, an honor, like as I said at the beginning, and also it was very fun, because I felt, as you said, I don't remember before or after we started the recording, I felt like we know each other since forever, so it's very good and it's cool. It's
a good emotion. Thank you. And thank you, because I know it's not easy to do interviews in a language that you don't use every day. So thank you for doing the interview in English. And I feel the same. Like, you know, you're such amazing tattoo artist, graphic artist. You have beautiful award-winning, you know, graphic memoirs out there. So I feel really honored. But it's same, like we met on social media and we'd like, you know, messaged a bit on Instagram. But I feel like we know each other. Maybe it's the generation, the culture. I don't know, but it feels really good. So I'm very, very grateful. Yes, maybe we'll do a part two interview because I'm like, I have more questions, but. Well, thank you so much for sharing your time with the Gender Stories listeners. And dear listeners, thank you for keep listening to Gender Stories. This is definitely a labor of love. I do get to meet some wonderful, amazing people in that process, such as Nico. And please do check out Nico's work. You can support him on Patreon. And all those links are going to be in the episode description, patreon.com/graphicjournalclub. You can read his newsletter on Substack, Nico Balboa, substack.com. All those links are going to be in the episode description. And of course, you can check out Nico's website on nicosbalboastudio.com. And maybe one day I'll get you to tattoo me if I come to the States or I come to Rome. I would love that. That's my dream, Nico.
Be so cool. Let's make it happen.
I love this when we're like, I just the trans love that I feel for my community and how cool we are. It's just like, it's just strong. Well, thank you, listener. And until next time, take care of yourself, be daring, and dare to be your authentic self. There's a lot of joy whomever you are.